I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott and I'm joined today by Will Clay. Will, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, Adam. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good myself. It's quite nice starting these recordings when it's still light outside, which is a strange one. Obviously, this is something that happens through the summer, but there's not a lot going on in the summer because we don't have any football to talk about. So usually that period of the season is quite boring. But I'm quite enjoying the extra bit of daylight that we get. Makes me feel a bit more productive as well. I don't know about you. And I have eaten some food, so I'm feeling good. Have you managed to eat after your athletics?
I haven't. After this.
So you've come on just for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you said you wanted to get this done, so I thought I'd accommodate.
I appreciate that. If I'd known you hadn't eaten, I'd have told you to do that. It doesn't matter now. We're here. And yes, we're here today to talk about Middlesbrough, aren't we? But first, I think we should talk about some new stuff because the guys, the stupid other guys, you can't trust them at all to do anything right because they didn't really talk about it in a lot of detail. But when they did the news section on the last pod, it had actually been the EFL Awards, which Leeds were absolutely dominant at. So I think it's probably worth having a little chat about that. You yourself are the Archie Gray of this podcast.
Yep.
And he won two awards. He got the Apprentice of the Year and the Young Player of the Year. So talk to me about that.
Young Player, I think, is entirely deserved. And I'm not sure what more there is to be said because he's actually played the whole season. Whereas Rowe at Norwich is no doubt a good player, but he's been injured a lot. So it'd be the same as claiming Strouk should be in the Team of the Year, in my opinion. He's a good player, but part of it has to be to do with availability.
I totally agree. Yeah, could not agree more.
And then the apprentice one, I don't really know what that means, to tell you the truth. So please enlighten me.
I don't actually know myself. I think it's something to do with you have to be under the age of 18 before a season starts. Now, don't quote me on that, anyone listening, but I think it is that. Not 100%. But yeah, and obviously he's one of the few players in the Championship that's played a lot that kind of ticks that criteria. I can't even remember who his competition was in that, but he was never ever going to lose it, was he? Especially if you're going to win the Young Player Award, which they did first, then he was always going to win the Apprentice Award. It kind of gave it away, in my opinion. And then who else were the winners? So we had Jorginho Rutter, Ethan Ampadu. They were both in the team of the season. Martin did touch on this briefly because obviously anything related to Jorginho Rutter, he's going to talk about. But again, it feels really deserved, even though there were a few other sort of names going around on Twitter in particular.
Yeah, I don't think any of the awards can be argued with, even the non-Leeds ones. You know, McKenna winning Manager of the Year. We keep saying that, you know, Ipswich might be, they get a deflected goal or this, that and the other. But, you know, there's no doubting that McKenna has done a brilliant job and they're a very well-coached side.
Absolutely, yeah. You can be both a bit like lucky and on the right side of variance and a well-coached team. That is entirely plausible. And in their case, they absolutely are. But I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about how happy I am for Crescencio Somerville, who I wasn't sure was going to win that award, because genuinely do believe that the competition around it was very, very tough. He had Sammy Schmodix, who, I mean, if he wins it, then I feel like Ross McCormack should have won it for us a few years ago and didn't.
That was going to be my counter-argument.
Yeah. So it would have felt a little bit hypocritical, but I would understand if he had, because he has been terrific, as much as he did just score the winner against us in the last game, but we don't need to talk about that. And then obviously Kiernan Dewsbury Hall, for me, is probably pound for pound the best player in the division. So in a way, you kind of like, your expectations with him were quite high going into the season, and has he really done more than people expected? I'm not sure. He's just been brilliant, and so has Somerville. So I would have been happy with either of those two winning, but I am delighted that it's the Leeds player, personally.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, that's great, but we do have to talk about Middlesbrough. We've got three games left, and this is one of them. But first, before we do, Martin spoke with Johnny from the Borough Breakdown. You all thought you weren't hearing Martin's voice today, but actually you are. So here he is, and you can listen to that right now.
Hi, Johnny. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, Martin. Thank you. I'm good. I'm excited to catch up with you, to be honest, and give you a little bit of insight on Borough this year. Be a nice little therapy session for me as well, but I appreciate you having me on.
No, we appreciate you coming back on. I think last time it was Dan who you spoke to, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was Dan. It was great. It was great to catch up with Dan, but it's just... you know, it was quite interesting last time around, but I'm intrigued to see what happened this time around, with it being so towards the end of the season, everything's pretty much done and dusted.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a bit of a hectic end to the season for us, but we're not here to talk about Borough today. So we'll get straight into the questions. First of all, how has Borough's season been?
I would say it's a season of what ifs, the whole season. You know, we've had a lot of injuries, a lot, about averaging about 10 to 13 out for most of the season, 14, 15 at a max. And then we started off terrible and then got better. You know, we bottomed the league at one point, and then got to a point where, you know, our consistency was there. The team was starting to come together. And then January come around, we sold a couple of players as well, obviously notably Morgan Rogers to Aston Villa. And yeah, it's just been a bit of an up and down season. I think if I were looking at our numbers, we're top, or definitely the top two for biggest chances missed, underperforming XG. And it just shows that we create plenty of chances, we just don't put them away. And we've done really well against teams above us, but the teams below us, like that bottom eight, we just can't seem to beat them. Like, we managed to do the double over Leicester, but then we couldn't beat Rotherham. So it's just a very what-if season, to be honest.
And that makes sense. And Leeds fans can relate to having lots of chances and not putting them away. So we definitely know how you feel on that end of things. It was about 2 months ago now, but how did Borough do in the January transfer window? There were any notable or departures or arrivals that we should know about? Obviously, we know one who came to you in January.
Yeah. Bill's doing great as well, you know. Like, I'm really happy with Luke Erling. I think he's definitely grew into it. You know, his assist has been fantastic, not getting the ball in the box and, you know, another assist at the weekend. Obviously, Morgan Rogers leaving was a big one, but it came out the blue, really, to be honest. No one expected him to go. And we've got a decent deal, a good sell-on clause as well. And it just felt like you can't stand in someone's way for him to move, to be honest. But yeah, like, I would say, like, Bill's been probably the standout loan signing for us. And getting players back too, I think that's been really useful, because of the amount of injuries we've had. But looking at our team as well, like, it's very much just depleted from top to bottom. So really, it's only out of the loan players that we have. I know you've seen Sam Greenwood as well. He came in the summer. There's Luke Erling, Lewis O'Brien. I feel like I'm missing one. But out of them, I probably wouldn't take any of them. Maybe Luke Erling, I think now, as he started to come get better and better and grow into it, I feel like he's just got to a point where we could probably take him next year if he's out of contract. So, but other than that, I wouldn't say there's nothing notable. I would say the only thing notable is the amount of we've had throughout the season, and it's just slowly starting to click now, which is good.
That's good to hear. But I'm glad that Bill's doing well for you. He's very, very well loved amongst the Leeds fan base for all he's achieved with us. And so it's great to see that he's starting to kick on for you and showing what he can bring. So that's great. Loved it to hear. How do you feel your squad looks at the moment? Was there any signs that you felt you needed in January which didn't arrive?
Oh, yeah, 100%. We need another centre forward because, you know, we had a lot of injuries and Josh Colburn was leading the line for us and it was desperate that we try to get one in. We didn't. We agreed a fee for Brandon Vasquez, but then he went to, is it Monterrey? Maybe, I might be wrong. But we didn't get that over the line and it was a bit frustrating because we definitely needed one. But then also, like, I felt like we needed another winger. You know, like Isaiah Jones is good, but he's just fairly inconsistent. Riley McGree was away in Australia, and so was Sammy Silvera with the Australian team, sorry. And we just need, I think, an out-and-out winger probably on the left-hand side just to chop and change it up a little bit. But in terms of that, apart from probably the winger, centre-forward, you know, bringing in Finazaz was an unbelievable bit of business. That was the name I was missing. And I can't believe I missed that name because he's just so fun, I think, to watch. And he took his time a little bit to click, but the last few games really started to come into it. So to bring him in was great. I felt like we needed an out-and-out winger. To bring in a right-back we needed, but then the centre-forward, we just couldn't do it. But I would say it's an okay window. But in terms of the squad right now and where we currently at, like I was saying before, it's just a bit all over the place in terms of depleted, but you've got enough bodies there to kind of play the system. Whereas before, we had like everyone out. There was like square pegs and round holes, and it just didn't really work out. But right now, you know, we've got some notable players missing, like Hayden Hackney, Darren Lenihan. Probably it's really two key ones. Ryan McGree's out for the rest of the season. Marcus Voss. So there's some key players missing still, similarly to the game when we had in December. But yeah, we're doing all right. You know, we're 9 unbeaten. So it's just slowly ticking along.
That's good. It's good to hear. So I think most clubs will say that they could maybe done with a bit more in January. But yeah, I can see those that you mentioned. I think they would have given you that bit extra, which maybe could have seen you maybe one position higher. But yeah, I think overall you've got some good players in your squad. I do really like Finazaz. He was one who caught my eye. Was it Plymouth he was at before, I believe?
Yeah, he was at Plymouth Fire, Aston Villa, wasn't it? And we paid $2 million for him, which is, I feel like it's an absolute snip, you know. Like, I feel like we've done really well to bring him in. To sell on Morgan Rogers for $15 million and then bring Finazaz in for two, that's a good bit of business, and I think you're going to be happy with that, and hopefully Finn can just continue to grow with us and hopefully be successful.
Fingers crossed. So how have your recent results been? Do you think your position in the table is a fair reflection on how you've been doing this season?
It is. It really is, because of how inconsistent we've been. You know, we're 9 unbeaten right now. The playoffs are done and dusted. But saying that, we've played reasonably well, I would say, for most of the season. Being unlucky at points, and I think the aspect of having like the big chances missed has been really the issue. You know, we do create a lot in the game against you guys in that first half. Created a great goal. We were creating opportunities and then that red card, and, you know, we kind of fell apart in the end. But we've created chances against everyone. And if we were able to put those away, last year we did, this year we haven't. We would be up there, but the defeats against like Rotherham, not being able to beat most of the teams in the bottom eight, is the reason why we're in the position we are. It's a lot of what ifs, and unfortunately we've just not been good enough in those games to warrant a playoff place. It's a bit of a disappointment, really, because where we wanted to be at the start of the season was probably that playoff automatic spot, but it just hasn't really worked out for us, and it's a bit frustrating. But you know, I'm glad that we're building onto something now, and when we come out in the summer, we'll start to build again. And then once we've built in the right areas, we can go for probably automatics or the playoffs again next year. And fingers crossed, we don't have a horrendous start like we have. So, but yeah, I would say we deserve to be where we are. To be honest, I think we're the most 9th or 10th team in the division, just based on like our inconsistencies.
No, I can relate to that. We've had a few seasons where it was like that before. Bielsa came along to us, so we can relate to that sort of feeling very well. So speaking more about how you play in possession, so what how do you create these chances that you be having, so how do you look to build up the thirds?
Yeah, definitely. I think the way we did it previously was slightly different. It was more like the 3-2-5 shape, try to get the ball wide to Giles, he would knock the ball at the whack pom, and that would be how Boris scored goals last year. But this year it's a bit different. We're trying to work the ball in the box a lot more. Much more of a passing team, trying to get in behind, and it suits Lyle Laff to a T, to be honest, because He's really quick, likes to get in behind, makes really strong runs, gets himself into good positions. And you just need to marry that up with your team and how you build that out. So how we would play is we still try and play that three at the back when we're in possession. We'll still try and push one of our wing backs up. Bill on the right-hand side is getting that ball in the box. He's striking a good relationship with Laelaf at the moment. And it was something I spoke about with you guys, just to kind of say, like, where would we see his biggest strengths lie? And you can definitely see it in his crossing ability. And us playing three at the back as well at times when we're playing defence in that 3-2-5, it helps him a little bit as well in terms of recovery. I think sometimes when we play like that 2-4-4 shape, we can get caught. And when he's on his recovery run, that's really difficult for us. But yeah, we'll try and play out from the back. It's not as good as we have done previously. We don't really mix it up a little bit. So if you have a good press, we'll probably create a big error and we'll concede. But last year we had Matt Crooks there and you were able to knock the ball long. He was able to like chest it down and get us out with danger and we were able to mix up. But this year it's very much one or two ways. And one, it's really good. On the other side, it's really poor. But yeah, we'll try and work it in the box as much as we can. But I would say defensively over the last few weeks when we've been switching with that 3-5 at the back or 4-2-3-1, it's been a lot better and a lot more solid than it has been over like the last year.
I'm a big fan of the way Carrick has got you playing throughout the past two seasons, and I do think he's a manager who has got a lot about him and does well to adapt to games. I think he made some small changes in the game against us, which I wasn't expecting. They were unlucky in that game to not come away with more. So yeah, but what about out of possession when the other team has the ball? How do you look to press and try to win the ball back?
We were when we were in possession last year, our biggest weakness and also was our biggest strength was transitional football. On the transition, we were brilliant. When we were getting transitioned against, we were absolutely awful and we couldn't defend for our lives. So we'd overcommit quite a bit. But this year it's been a little bit different. I would say our fullbacks have tried to stay back a lot more than they have done previously. So trying to give yourself that base, so when you do get counterattacked, you've got the ability to, you know, to be more defensively sound than we have done in the previous year. What we'll try and do is, I don't think we're as aggressive in the press than we have been in, and it's probably right that we aren't. I think we try and play with that mid block and just try and, you know, get a little bit tighter, I think, than previous years. But I think the one time I've seen us defend so, so well was when we played Chelsea and we played a back five. We adopted the back five for a few weeks in the Championship to start this new run that we were on. And it was like more of a, like a, it was a bit low block at times. And, you know, you had to defend for long periods, but it was successful and we were able to build and get people on the counter-attack. And it was really useful for us because we were able to attack with pace when we had Jones on the right and we had Laelaf as well getting the ball over the top. So we'll try and probably sit in that 4-2-3-1 for me, try and get bodies behind the ball, try and limit the space and just try and dominate the central area. I think that's one big difference that we've had from the previous year where we were quite expansive defensively. This year, it's all about holding that centre. And when we play that the 3-4-2-1, you've got enough bodies in there, that central area, to make it really difficult. And I would not be surprised if we went back to that on Monday night, to be honest.
That's good. Some good information there. Thank you. And who have you been your key players, would you say, this season? After you've mentioned Bill and what he brings on the wing-back side, but who else is key to your game?
Yeah, a lot of injuries. But I would say, like, Finnis Asen, obviously, in that number 10 role is really influential. They have the ability to float across the pitch and get into pick up little pockets of space and try and get the ball in for Laelaf. Laelaf is someone who has just got into form very recently. He's been injured for most of the season. And 7-9 now. Gets himself in good areas. His finishing's a lot less rash than what it was at the start of the season before he got injured. And he's an exciting player. And I'm really, honestly, I cannot wait for next year just for him to have. He's had that season under his belt. And I can't wait to see what he does next because he looks like a really fun player. And for us as well, like we normally would say, like that one player in that double pivot is really useful and try and help us play out from the back. You know, it's been frustrating this year, you know, with Hackney out because he was so influential last year, where Lewis O'Brien or Dan Balassi will try and play that role. And it's, if they have a bad game, Borough will have a really bad game as well. So they do try and play through them at times. And it's just all about how Borough really try and switch the play, to be honest. I think sometimes we get too caught up in trying to play it around the back where really it should be two or three or four passes and then you try and switch it. But we're just not doing that. We try and box ourselves in a little bit. But those key players, I would say, whoever's in that double pivot with Johnny Howson, obviously a former Leeds boy, and Laelaf, Finn Azaz, and then I would say Senny Dieng as well in goal. It's really influential now, that goalkeeper position. His distribution's really good. So when he gets it right, we were able to get the ball over the top. And I think it's just a nice little thing now, because not many teams play that long ball over the top. But when we do, it can be successful. So I would say those are the three or four players to look out for who are definitely influential for us.
Lewis O'Brien is someone who Leeds were linked with once upon a time, when we had Bielsa. And he's a player who I've watched a fair bit of, and I do appreciate what he does on the pitch. So I'm glad to see that he's doing well for you as well. Are you expecting any changes to your usual style of play against Leeds?
Not at all. I don't think we'll change. We don't change at all. We didn't when we went to Welland Road either, and that was interesting. It was really nice to see us play out from the back at Elland Road as well and really break the line. So I don't think we'll change at all.
That's good to hear. I don't like teams who have been changed for the top opposition. You've got to have the style of play that you've got and stick to it. So it should be a good matchup. Looking forward to it. So you've mentioned that you've had injuries throughout the season. I think you mentioned some of them earlier. Just recap those who are currently out at the moment for you.
I've got a few. So obviously for the game against Leeds, we're without Bill and we're without Sam Greenwood. We have in defence, we've got Daryl Lenihan, Dale Fry. Is our noble two. Alex Bangura is just coming back, so he'll probably still make the bench. We have Hayden Hackney, who's out injured, Marcus Force, Riley McGree, Josh Corbin. Did I say Marcus Force? I did. I'm trying to think. I feel like I'm missing a couple of players here. But we have a lot of notable missing players already. And obviously we have the two who are Leeds owned in Greenwood and Bill. So it'll be obviously a couple of changes. I'll see Sam Silvera coming on the left for Greenwood. And then for Bill, it'll probably be Dyke Steele. He'll probably operate that right-back position, to be honest. And he had a bit of a time at Elland Road, to be honest.
Bearing well in mind with the injuries you've got, can you give us your best guess on what your lineup will look like in full?
Yeah, I don't think we'll change it too much that we had against Ipswich, to be honest. I think it'll be Dieng in goal. I think it'll be Dyke Steele right-back with Matt Clark and Rav Vandenberg centre-half. And then we'll probably have Lucas Engel left back with Johnny Howson. And I'm probably going to say Dan Barlesa here because I feel like he might come in for O'Brien. And then in that attacking three or four of the quadrant is probably Jones on the right, Greenwood on the left, Finn Azaz and Emmanuel Laelaf up top.
Sounds good. So we don't ask for predictions on this podcast, but what I will ask is, where do you think this game will be won or lost?
Transition. It'll be in the transition. It depends how quickly we can recover. And if we can't, we give up too much space, then I feel like Leeds will punish us. We've seen it in that first game, really, where you guys have a lot of pace in behind and or in the wings as well, which we don't really are not very blessed with. So it's going to be a very difficult game for us. There'll definitely be more pace and transition will probably be the key factors going into the game on Monday.
And follow stats. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Where can our listeners find your content?
You can find us the Borough Breakdown podcast, so that you search for Borough Breakdown podcast on your podcast providers. And if you want to search or find us on Twitter, it's Borough_Breakdown. And yeah, that's where we'll be. And if you want to find some Borough content, then I'll see us cry if we get beat. That's where you'll probably find us.
Great. Thanks again so much for joining us, Johnny. And hope you enjoy the game.
Cheers, Martin. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, bye.
Top stuff. As ever, Johnny has been on the pod twice a season, and I'm probably fair in saying that he's been maybe our strongest guest across both pods. Top work again. Thanks, Martin. Yeah, he had a lot of interesting things to say, though. So we'll dive straight into some of that. So we don't need to talk about anything that's changed because he's discussed a lot of that, but Johnny mentioned that the game will probably be dictated by transitions, Will. Recently, they haven't actually been very wedded to their in-possession structure of building the ball up through the thirds. And are you expecting us to allow them the ball, Will, based on everything he said?
I think, in parts, I wouldn't be opposed to us letting them have the ball. But then also, he said it himself, that they quite often have a mistake in them playing out from the back. So it would be foolish not to at least pick our moments to press. Particularly, I watched I know you've watched a lot of Middlesbrough across the last while, and I haven't watched anywhere near that amount, but I did watch Middlesbrough-Ipswich, which was their most recent game. And in that, they were trying to play out from the back at times. They just have a few players that I'm not sure are that great at it.
Yeah.
Which is something I'd quite like us to target. Clark, who is their left centre-back, he's the one, if people remember, gave away the penalty on Ruta in the home fixture earlier this season. I don't think he's the best on the ball. And in their game on Saturday, there was a few moments where he just passed it to, not even to an Ipswich player, just out of play, or, you know, looked panicked. And you just think, he could be got at, I would like. But then equally, there were times Ipswich were a pressy side in themselves, but there was a few moments where they were quite happy to sort of let Middlesbrough pass it around the back and catch a bit of a breather, which I think we might do at times as well. And I wouldn't be too worried if we did see some of that.
Absolutely. And I think Martin kind of spoke about this in the interview, was saying that, he appreciates managers that try to stick with their style and don't want to adapt too much when they've got an opposition in 24th or an opposition in second or third in the league. Middlesbrough feel like they are at least trying to be a team that can build through the thirds, as Johnny mentioned, and that's kind of what I've noticed. But at the same time, I do think their strengths are in transition like us, which is interesting. So I don't expect them to not go direct at all, because I do think there are going to be opportunities to do that, and I think they will, because if there's a chance to play over our press, I think they'll do it. And I think they've got players out wide in particular and up front who have enough speed on the shoulder to get in behind and spin, you know, and get in. So the goal they scored against Ipswich was kind of like that in a way. The main thing for me, though, is that Carrick is a seriously impressive manager, in my opinion. And even though we've just said all of that about how they like to try and possess the ball and what they're trying to do with it, and they're slowly becoming more and more of a possession-based team, probably going into next season in particular even more, I do think he's one of the most adaptable managers in the Championship. I've got written down here that he's more of a tinkerer than most sort of EFL managers. There's a few I can think of. Mark Robbins is pretty good in that regard. I would actually say he's probably one of the best managers outside the Premier League, just in my opinion. His in-game adaptations are really, really impressive a lot of the time. He will try to kind of base what they're going to do off the opposition. So even though Johnny has said they're probably going to try and possess the ball, don't expect them to do that all game. If it's not working, he will definitely try to change things. The other managers I really like, just for anyone wondering, are Carlos Corberan and Kieran McKenna, for different reasons. I think these guys are all top managers. I think all three of the ones we've mentioned there will probably manage in the Premier League at some point, possibly with the clubs they are currently at, especially in those three cases. So yeah, but I'm expecting possession is basically what we're after here. But yes, anyway, should we talk a little bit more about recent results and form? As Johnny mentioned, they are unbeaten in the last 9 under Carrick. Yay, what a time to play them then. Albeit they almost certainly fall short of the playoffs now. However, we've noticed a theme recently in the Championship of teams that are meant to be beachy not being all that beachy at all, Will, which is obviously fantastic. Are you expecting them to try and win this game just like any other, because, you know, other teams have done so and other teams are continuing to do so, or do you expect them to be on the beach?
Oh, I don't see why they wouldn't try to win. You know, given their form, they're on a roll. In the Ipswich game, it had the Borough commentators, the one I was listening to, and they were proudly calling themselves the form team in the division. And you could tell they were quite up for giving it a go at Ipswich. So that if that's what they're going to do away from home against a title contender, you know, when they are at home, and then you add in I can never decide what to call it. It's a sort of local rivalry, isn't it?
Local enough. There's a bit there. There's a bit more.
There's a little bit of an edge, but it's not super. But more so than Ipswich, let's say. I think they should. There's no reason they won't try to win. And we're seeing the flip side of being beachy, right? Because, you know, sometimes teams don't have things to play for, but that can kind of free them up to be a bit brave and think, well, we may as well have a go, because if it goes wrong, so what? You can play without pressure in a way that all of the teams at the top aren't doing at the moment and are struggling, whereas the opposite has been true for some of the teams a bit further down the table, and Middlesbrough are a good example of that for now.
Yeah, they are, in my opinion, because they can mathematically get into the playoffs, but I think even their most optimistic fans and players and staff will know it's probably beyond them now. But I do agree. I think it's about keeping this run going, isn't it? You're unbeaten in nine. Why not carry that through into next season? I think that's what Carrick will be looking to do, and he'll be looking to upset a team towards the top of the table, which wouldn't be the first time this season that he's managed to do that. He's got some impressive scalps this season on his record. Even if they did get knocked out by Chelsea, for example, they did win the first game. The only thing I would say, though, interestingly, is that they've been a side that's been better away from home this season. And I don't know whether that's going to have any bearing or weight on this game, but obviously a lot of people looked at this fixture and thought, you know what, that's one of the toughest ones we've got left. But that's making me feel a tiny bit better, knowing that they are slightly better away from home and more of their scalps have come in the sort of away fixtures. So, yeah, hopefully it doesn't come back to bite us. But as we say, unbeaten in nine, you know, some big wins in there. 3-1 against Norwich, that sticks out. It's quite a big one. Draw with Southampton, 1-1. Draw with Ipswich, 1-1. Draw with Hull, 2-2. Those are pretty decent points. And then some sort of regulation wins against the Swanseas and Birmingham Cities of the world in there as well, and QPRs. But still, pretty impressive. They did have a real go at making the playoffs. They've just kind of fallen short because Norwich have won a game. And yeah, like if we're looking at the XG from those games as well, just while I've got it in front of me, for the most part, they were the better team in majority of those games. The ones they weren't, which might fill us with a little bit of confidence, were actually Ipswich and Southampton, which they managed to draw, but they were on the receiving end of losing those games quite comfortably on XG, particularly the Southampton one. So hopefully we are more Southampton than we are Norwich City, let's put it that way. Yeah, Johnny's obviously talked a lot about how they're setting up in and out of possession, so we won't go into too much detail there. But yes, from what we have seen, as I've mentioned over the last years with Carrick, he has certainly been an adaptable manager and is happy to sometimes break away from some of his principles in one-off games. Could this be the case here, in your opinion? I'm thinking particularly about that Chelsea win in the Carabao and also the double that they've done over Leicester. Are you expecting them to kind of try and possess the ball, or are you expecting them to kind of do what they did? They did a bit of a number on Leicester and they just hit them in transition all the time.
I think they might just stick to what they've been doing recently and play a four, because it is true, you know, Chelsea and Leicester, they switched it up, but in their recent run, and including getting results against Southampton and Ipswich, they played a back four. So that's what they've been doing recently. And as we've said, you know, the season is sort of over. You may as well think we'll try and play the way we want to, and at least either you win in happy days or you don't, and it's a learning curve for next year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I meant to ask part of the question, but I forgot to say, yeah, that those games, they did change to a back three. So thank you for picking up the pieces there for me. But they probably will play a back four here, and probably going to play the same principles as they have been for recent games. Largely do agree. Yeah, anyway, Johnny has talked about their squad, but I think it's always interesting from an outside perspective to give a bit of a view and an opinion on where it's at right now. So what do you believe is the current level of the squad overall? Which players do we need to look out for in this game as well? Some of the, start with the good ones first.
Well, I really liked the two or three players that I noticed in the Ipswich game. One was Isaiah Jones, who isn't a new noticer. I've been a fan of his for years. And at one point, he was meant to be making a move up to the Premier League, right? So I don't sort of know what's happened there, but there was links. Was it last summer or the one before? As when he was playing as a right wing back.
Yeah, there was plenty. I can't remember all the teams, but there's been plenty.
Was it Spurs under Conte when they were playing a five, maybe? I don't know.
Possibly. Well, they ended up getting Spence, didn't they?
Yeah, and that went really well for them. So congratulations. But besides that, and it's one that Johnny had mentioned in Late La up front, I thought, in the game at Elland Road, I was sort of thinking, oh, he's got a bit about him and, you know, is a functional championship striker, but seems to have, in this run they've gone on, stepped up his game a bit more. And Johnny was saying he can't wait for next season, essentially, because he's got five goals in his last five and I thought looked a real handful against Ipswich. So that'll be a job for, you'd imagine it'll be Rodon and Ampadu trying to keep him quiet because, yeah, he scored and then in the 80th minute about in the Ipswich game, he did brilliantly to long ball, hold off a centre-back, laid in Jones, who really, really, really should have scored and didn't. So I'd look out for him. And then, is it Vandenberg or Vandenberg? I can't remember. The right-sided defender. I thought he looked quite good, but I'd like to say that I think it's wrong that a right-sided defender wears number three. Besides that, it's players that Leeds fans will know about because we've talked about, or they've played for Leeds, Howson, O'Brien, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Ailing, but you know, we won't be seeing him.
No, we won't, which actually, on Ailing, it was good to hear, wasn't it, that he's been doing well. I've seen a little bit of it online as well, but it's good to hear that Johnny said it as well. He's become a bit of a favourite, especially because he looked kind of done here, didn't he?
Yeah. When he left, I was sort of thinking, it's a shame because of what he's done, but I have absolutely no doubt that he probably can't play at the level we would need. And I thought Middlesbrough, maybe he'd be a rotation player and an experienced head, but from what Johnny was saying, and from there was a stat the other day, right, about he's got the most assists in March of any Championship player.
Something like that. It's crazy.
So, full credit to him. He did a lot for Leeds, and it's nice to see he's found another place where he can show the quality that we know he has, rather than the struggles that were beginning to be exposed a bit in his last while with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the overall look of the squad, just looking at it from an outside perspective, as I say, one of the big things for me is actually more having Carrick, because they've had that continuity and that really does help. But it does feel like the squad got quite a lot weaker this season, at least in terms of the base level of it, because essentially a lot of their best players from last season were loans. You know, your Ryan Giles, your Aaron Ramsey, not that one. He's on loan from Villa, he was. A few others that have all kind of just left and have left big holes, even Tchoubarakpom as well. And then in January, they lost two other players that were pretty key contributors for the first half of the season. Morgan Rodgers, after just 6 months of having him, he left to Aston Villa. They made a lot of money on him. And Matt Crooks, who...
Yeah, went to the MLS, right?
Yeah, he did. And he was quite a good player in terms of that adaptability I was talking about, because he gave you a different kind of outlet you could aim for him, because he's really, really big, big chest, you know, big header of the ball as well. So you could kind of just look for him long and he could hold it up. Even though he was kind of more of an attacking midfielder, he was more of a kind of target man in some respects, but they don't have those dynamics now. But at the same time, I do think the squad's fairly good. It's like on the cusp of being a playoff team. I think you've got some players I'm glad are out, let's put it that way. Fry, you know, seasoned Championship pro now. He's only in his mid-20s, but he's played loads of games at this level. Hayden Hackney's a really tidy footballer on the rise, one of the better young players they've got. You've got McGree, who's out of this game. He's a really fantastic, like, attacking midfield type profile, kind of plays a winger as well. Marcus Force, I think he's a really, really, really good finisher. I think he's one of the better ones in the Championship. He's out as well. Lenihan, another really seasoned, experienced Championship pro, just again injured, and it's like these things are going to kill them a little bit. And now they have to contest with the fact that Ailing, who's been key to their structure, as Johnny mentioned in the build-up, and he's not going to be able to play because he's obviously not allowed to against Leeds, he's ineligible. So I think there's problems there for them, but there's also some good players, as you mentioned, and I like the look of Vandenberg, as you mentioned. I like Engel at left back, looks absolutely steady, like he doesn't look anything especially spectacular, but just really solid. Lewis O'Brien, as you mentioned, in the house, and are just players that Leeds fans are going to know, so I don't really want to talk about them too much. Dieng's really, really helped in terms of build-up and sweeping, and his in-possession stuff is a lot better than some of the keepers they've had, so I think it suits Carrick. And then Azaz, that was one of the star signings in January of any team, I think, so really, really good pickup. And then you mentioned Jones and Latelaf, and not just the quality they have, but the speed, and Latelaf has really hit a good vein of form, and I don't think it's like not been coming. I think it has been. I think he's been pretty decent all season, and then the numbers just needed to start bearing out in terms of actual goal contributions, and it is happening now for him. And interesting with him, I listened back to the preview of the game earlier in the season. I don't normally do that for these podcasts, but I did because Carrick was the manager then, and I think it made a lot of sense to see what we said. And one of the things I pointed out was that I don't like Josh Coburn, and I think he might be injured himself right now, but even if he's not getting in the team with Latelaf in the form he's in.
Yeah.
He's been particularly brilliant. I think things are promising to next season if they could keep the majority of this squad together and kind of just add like that sort of cream on the top of the cake, really, the two or three players that are really going to push you up into that next tier. But one of the big things I would say is that they've kind of had to show they've got a decent squad in terms of depth, because they have had to lean on a lot of these guys because a lot of them have been injured. And as you messaged me earlier, you're like, I can't believe how many injuries they've had. It's actually quite remarkable. And it is, it really is. So I think fair play to them. And they've actually had a pretty decent season considering all of those circumstances. We haven't even named all the players that are out and all the players that have been out. Some of them have come back for obvious reasons. I think O'Brien missed like 3 months or something. So he's back now. So yeah, a lot of problems at Borough, but hopefully they put it behind them for next season, because I actually don't mind them. I know there's a bit of a rivalry, if you want to call it that, but I kind of like Carrick and I kind of like what they're doing.
I'm quite indifferent on them in general, but then yeah, Carrick, it's just interesting to see English managers getting a chance based on their actual ability rather than their name without naming anyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so Carrick, McKenna, etc. Happy to see them do well, even if occasionally that might go against what's perfect for Leeds.
I don't disagree with that. But yeah, I don't think the squad's perfect, and I do think we have had a slight advantage of them playing Dyke Steele in this game. Would you agree? I think he's probably a point of weakness.
Yeah, he got sent off, right, in the home game?
I think he did, yeah.
Because I watched the highlights back, because when I just couldn't really remember what had happened, and it was 3-2, and it was... I remember at the time after the game there was... or I've re-remembered sort of thing. There's a few Middlesbrough fans complaining about the game changed with the red card. And even looking back on it now, without the emotion of what you think on the day, they're just two of the most obvious yellows you've ever seen. He pulled Somerville down when he was away and was not in on goal, because it wasn't a goal-scoring opportunity because he was out wide, but he was, you know, well away and in a dangerous situation. And then the other one was... he just crunched Dan James after the ball had gone. So he's not a very good player, or it might be harsh. He hasn't played well against the wingers we have. That might be in his head a little bit. If it is, I'd quite like to see Somerville. I think in the last few weeks, a little bit, Somerville has stopped really, really going at people in the way that we know he can. So I'd quite like to see him try that early.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously... Leeds fans, some of them on Twitter this week will have been talking about this right back position for them, because obviously they've got Ayling and they can't play him in this game. And a lot of fans were saying that because his form had been so good for Borough that we might actually be in an advantageous position because he can't play. I'm not really going to buy into that too much, because I think from a defensive perspective and from a sheer like sort of tracking back and recovery speed perspective, Luke Ayling is not very good. I don't mean that in an offensive way. So I do think that we are losing something there with that matchup, whereas Dyke Steele definitely has a bit more athleticism.
Yeah, he's physical. I just don't think exactly. He's a brilliant footballer.
Yeah, that's the opposite of what they might lose in possession, though, which is what Ayling has been doing for them in terms of their structure and build-up in that three that... Johnny was talking about, and yeah, it looks like it's been working really well for them. So there's kind of pros and cons to Ayling missing in this game. I mean, I'm sure Ayling would probably prefer Leeds to win. I think he'd rather we went up, actually, in his predicament.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't say it out loud, but I'm sure that's what he would be hoping for his pals. And yeah, then I think the only other player that I wanted to talk about that's maybe a fairly... significant weakness for them, I think, is the winger Silvera. They haven't really been able to nail down the left-sided spot for most of the season. Greenwood's played there a bit, Azaza's played there a bit. Silvera's quite fast, but like, I don't think he offers a lot of end product. He has not impressed me in any game I've seen of Borough this season, so I'm kind of glad that Greenwood's out, even though Greenwood hasn't really set the world alight in recent months at all. I think Silvera doesn't really offer too much other than speed, which obviously gives you something in transition, but he's not been particularly great, although he did either score or assist against Leicester, I seem to remember. So maybe he will here, and maybe he's a big game player, but who knows? I think that's it, unless there's anyone you wanted to talk about that you've kind of noticed that you think is a particular weakness. He obviously talked about the pivot player potentially being able to be pressed, same with Matt Clark, as you mentioned, but anyone else?
As you kind of said, you said it about Engel, but it's true of a lot of their players that they're kind of functional championship, that there's not anyone that I think you are absolutely rubbish, besides saying that, you know, Clark can be pressed a bit. So yeah, happy to move on.
Yeah, I agree. So Will, talk to me about the data side of things here then. What is that saying about their season so far? Because this is normally Martin's section, but I'm forcing it upon you today.
I sort of, as someone who doesn't massively look at data, was surprised to see that my perception of Middlesbrough last season, right, was, and we've spoken about the players they have or haven't lost, that they were quite good attacking and their defensive side let them down. And to be honest, that's kind of the case here again, that for XG from open play created, they're fifth with 49.3, slightly underperforming because only scored 47 goals. But their XG against, they're 16th with 38.49 XG conceded and 42 real goals. But then from set pieces, they are middle of the road. It sort of flips around from set pieces. They're less weird. Interesting attacking-wise. They're 13th, very middling, you know, whatever. Whereas against, they seem to be very good defending set pieces, where they're weak defending from open play, which is, I haven't watched enough of Middlesbrough to have an opinion on that, but it is a fairly random set of numbers almost.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, point, what is it, presses, I can never remember what PPDA stands for. I know it's pressing.
Passes per defensive action, but it's to do with pressing, yes.
Yeah, so they're kind of a bit pressy, but a bit not. They're 13th for that. So I guess that means they're pressing at times, but not others there. And it fits in right with what we've said about Carrick, mm-hmm. that he can tinker a bit. It depends who they're playing. You know, I'd imagine if you looked at the PPDA for when they've played weaker opposition, compared to when they've played Leicester or Ipswich, there might be quite a difference there. But overall, it makes a kind of middling average.
Yeah, it does. And the high turnovers from that, the eighth best in the league, so they, when they choose to do it, they're actually quite good at pressing. So, you know, it's quite impressive, yeah. I think the data's the strange one. I think that doesn't necessarily paint a full picture of where they've been. Obviously, we've talked about injuries and that's affected them. And I think without them, they'd probably have even better underlying numbers. But obviously, the open play XG and the set play XG that we've discussed there before and against, even a small bit of variation where, you know, you underperform on your XG and you are also underperforming slightly on your expected goals against, it makes a massive difference. And it does bear out in the expected points table, which I haven't got to hand, and there isn't actually a really updated version of it, but the one I looked at earlier was like mid-February, and I've checked this all season. They just haven't actually put one out on Opta recently, but they've basically been in the top six all season in that respect, literally the entire season. Now, obviously, game state might come into that a little bit, and I haven't got the data to kind of back that up, but in my head, I think they were going behind a lot in the middle part of the season and were kind of having to chase games. That might explain some of that. But for most of the season, being there, it makes me think, no, actually, this is a team that's actually really well structured and understands what they're being asked to do and can be adaptable. As you mentioned, the PPDA kind of thinks of a team that can be really aggressive in the press and maybe sometimes quite passive, and they will mix it up. So I think Johnny was talking about the what ifs and the fact that they're the most ninth place team in the Championship, in his opinion. I don't fully agree with that. I actually think they're a little bit better than that. And I do think it is just a culmination of a little bit of variance going against them and maybe just needing a bit more quality in terms of having some key players back. And if they had even a slightly more fit squad and some of the guys that we mentioned are more available, that would have made a massive difference in their season. I think one of the problems has been in both boxes, just it's going slightly against them on the wrong side of that variance. And that's all it is for me. So I do think this is a strong team and a good side. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, I think if we had to do a Championship prediction right now for next season, I'd have them in and around the playoff fight, definitely, rather than, mainly due to their bad start, they're kind of getting a bit lost in the middle of nowhere for large parts of this season. So yeah, that bad luck with on the pitch and off the pitch, and you know, the season could have gone very differently for them, I think.
Yep, it could, but as we mentioned before, it feels like their underlyings have become overlyings a little bit because they're unbeaten in nine now, so it feels like it's kind of clicked more in the final third. They've started to score a little bit more regularly, which is great timing. Really, really is. But anyway, I don't want to get bogged down into that and be too negative. Just remind us again of the predicted lineup that Johnny said they were going to be playing. I think he mentioned they've been using 4-2-3-1 most often, but they have also used a 3-4-3 for that Chelsea game, as mentioned, as well as the most recent 2-1 win over Leicester in February. But he's going with the former of being 4-2-3-1 than the latter of 3-4-3, isn't he? So just take us through that team again.
So Dieng in goal, I think was pretty confident that that'll happen. And then it was Dijksteel, Vandenberg, Clark, Engel, Housen, and then either Barlasser, I'm not actually sure.
Yeah.
Or O'Brien as the kind of other next to Housen, with then Jones, Azaz, and Silvera as the three with Latela up front. And if it is O'Brien, then it would mean that that side is unchanged from Ipswich, besides Ayling being an enforced change. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went with that again, because it worked the other day, and they've had, as we have, what is it, a 9-day rest between fixtures. So there shouldn't be too much need for fitness rotation.
Yeah, I'm interested because I think, both those two mentioned the sort of 50-50 he went over the Barlasser O'Brien one. They're both the deepest player in build-up, so they're going to receive from the centre-backs the most, I think. So interesting if there is a change there for whatever reason and why it would happen. I guess that's a question for the review when we get there. I think that brings us to the end of this section of the podcast. But before we move on to the Leeds analysis, we're going to go for a quick ad break. But first, a little more about our patron. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to hear this bit. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators that you enjoy, and you get extra content in return. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you also get other benefits, including early access to our preview podcasts, such as the one that you're listening to right now, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. We have three tiers in totals, which are, William?
The Berardi tier, starting at $1.99 a month, which is ad-free podcasts. Moving on, there's the Click tier, which is $3.99 a month, ad-free podcast, early access to preview pods where we can manage it. And then the best of all is the Pablo Hernandez tier at $4.99 a month, where you get all of the above that we've mentioned, but then also articles, pods, and videos.
Yes, which is definitely going to be worth your time this summer, because we're going to have plenty of content still coming out. So please do sign up. I think we've got some fun stuff for the end of season as well. We're going to do some awards and stuff like that. I am promising it. I'm not just saying this. So please do sign up if that sounds like something for you. And that is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right. Anyway, we are, as ever, recording this podcast before Daniel Farke's presser. So touch wood, there are no injuries or issues. There has been a 9-day break, as you mentioned in the first half of the podcast. So hopefully it's a full squad again, apart from Pascal Strouk.
Yeah, we've binned off Dallas. Sad times.
Absolutely, yes. I shouldn't laugh that. But yes, we have now. We don't even have to mention Stuart Dallas's name. I've been mentioning it all season in the section, but I don't have to anymore. But yes, we'll dive straight into the Leeds stuff then, Will. We've already talked about Borough's possession stuff and what we're expecting them to do to try and possess the ball for the most part. How do you expect that we will approach the game possession based on that?
We sort of touched on it a little bit earlier. I wouldn't mind this being a more even game. I think a lot of the games, I sort of said it after, I think it was the Watford and Hull review, that I don't think Leeds are a particularly possession team. We just end up having a lot of it. And this might be a game where actually we see the balance a bit more of, we don't demand the ball. If the other team want to have it in possession, I wouldn't mind seeing us sit off a little bit and letting Borough have the ball and then looking to transition, which is where our strength is, right?
It is indeed. And I think you're trying to say something without actually saying it. And that is that this is actually quite a good matchup for us in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be a little bit scarier compared to other games where we see a team have, what did Blackburn have? 3 shots or something?
Yeah. It's the lowest amount of shots that won at Elland Road in God knows how long. It was a long time.
So I'd expect Borough to have more than that, is what I'm trying to say. But equally, I don't think that's actually a bad thing for us necessarily.
No, I agree. I think that it does become a bit more transitional. Might even look a bit like Hull.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hull had more possession against us at Elland Road, and we managed to kind of make the most of that, and we had actually the better quality chances. And I'm kind of hoping that this game might go like that, even though it might be a bit scary if they have like 55% of the ball compared to our 45%. But something like that is maybe a possibility. I say that though, and as you mentioned, Carrick is quite adaptable, and if he notices that it's not really working for them, he might just tweak things and say, you know what, allow Leeds to be a little bit more pedestrian as they have been with the ball and just sit off. But I think we're both expecting them to kind of possess the ball where they can, which means that we'll be able to hit them in transition, and it might really, really suit us. The only thing I would say is that if the game does become really transitional like that, I am a little bit worried about what Latilath can do in terms of what they might do in transition themselves on the counter, because he is so quick and they can just go really direct down the channels, and he will just play on the shoulder against the high line. And even if they have the ball quite a bit, I don't expect us to be sat too deep. So that kind of takes me on to the next question, which is about our out of possession shape. I think even if we allow them the ball, we're going to still be pretty mid-blocky for the most part. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, to still be proactive rather than just letting them do what they want.
And obviously this season, there's been some teams that we've gone really kind of, as Martin talks about quite a lot, this hybrid press, the attackers will go really aggressive to get the ball. Especially if we think that they are not necessarily the best at build-up. And obviously, Johnny did mention that a couple of players, and we have as well, that a couple of players maybe struggle in that regard. Dyke still coming into the team probably helps in that respect. Clark, if he's playing, is another one. And then obviously, I think Barlasser is quite a tidy footballer, but like he can be pressed and they have made mistakes. So I still expect, even though it might be a mid-block, it might be a kind of hybrid press where we go quite aggressive on certain individuals and then we drop quickly into a mid block if we have to, but we're not scared to allow them the ball. I think that's what I'm expecting. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right, so let's talk a bit more about players for us and who's going to impact this game. I think I'm going to start you off with one quickly already. Crescencio Somerville, talk to me about him, because obviously we've already discussed the Dyke Steel effect and he's probably a little bit better than Ayling in terms of his physicality and athleticism these days. Like, he's a lot younger, is part of the reason for that. But in a game like this, if we are going to have less of the ball, surely he is going to be a crucial player here, Will.
Yeah, I'd hope so. Somerville's been weird recently because, you know, we had the international break and then for two games after that, he was unbelievable. And then after that, as you sort of think, oh, you know, could do a bit more here. And I'm hoping that part of that has been against a defence that sits so deep, the space for him to go into, he just gets crowded out and doubled up on and all of this. Whereas, as we've said, Borough, hopefully that won't be the case. And Dick Steele is not the best. So Somerville, please return to that sort of Watford and Hull double performance level where he was by far our best player. I think that would put us a long way on the road to 3 points.
Is there anyone else you can see having a big impact on the game, though, from a positive perspective for us?
I suppose it's positive in terms of it will help us win if Rodon is on it again. Looking at Late Lahi, for the most part in the Ipswich game, was not cutting in from the left, but he was on Ipswich's right centre-back, which, as we know, is and has been all season, Rodon. And then maybe Archie Gray, because if Silvera isn't, or whoever ends up playing right-back, basically, because if Silvera isn't amazing, maybe they can add a bit attacking-wise and kind of cheat on having to deal with him. But then I suppose the flip side of that is he's a quick boy. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I do agree about Rodon. I think he's going to be a really big part of... He already is and he has been all season part of our rest defence. I think if they do have an opportunity to transition, he's going to be the one that's going to have to get back at Late Lath at the most.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit scary. I think from a positive perspective, though, I think there's a few. I think it's mostly our transition boys. I'm hoping Nonto plays, for one.
Yeah.
I think you'd agree with that, and I'm hoping Ruta plays, because these are the sort of games where they're going to thrive even more in transition. I actually think Dan James would as well, but I do want Nonto to play after the performance against Blackburn. He was by far our best player.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be too many changes, so I think it's going to be a lot of the players that were kind of expecting. The only change I think might happen is Kamara. So, yeah,
he might come back in, right?
Yeah, I think it's quite likely, and that Gray does move back into right back. That's been the team that's played the most minutes through the course of the season.
Yeah.
Do you expect, I guess this brings us on to the predicted lineup now, unless there's anyone you are particularly worried about from a Leeds perspective, other than the speed element you've mentioned in attack that Roden's going to have to deal with. Is there anything else?
No, as you've sort of just alluded to, I wouldn't be surprised if Farke goes back to his sort of tried and trusted, won't ever rotate from team, with Nonto on the right instead of James, I'd imagine.
Yeah. And
at least from the start, because, you know, if the game does get transitional later, then that's when you bring in James and just tell him to do the thing.
I think James is a better sub when we're winning, right? He's going to give you a lot more out of possession as well than Nonto.
Yeah, yeah. And if we get, here's hoping, a goal ahead and Borough have to, you know, maybe attack a bit more. That's in the games where James has come on, in that sort of context, he's been very effective, if not creating or scoring, just getting us back up the pitch the other way. So it almost, by his attacking, helps us defend because it just gets us away from our goal. So I'd quite like to, you know, this is based on the fact that we might actually score a goal, which hasn't happened recently, but it'd be nice to see, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I think Ruter's one of the big ones in this one because he's going to have had that rest that he's probably needed for longer than he's actually been given.
We brought him back. I get why we did it, but yeah. He's not been allowed time to, because he played, 4 days after surgery, right? Something stupid like that.
I think it was a bit more than that, but yeah, it wasn't long, and like, it was a lot earlier than expected. So it was like, probably with hindsight, needed to give him a little bit longer on the sidelines.
Yeah, I can sort of forgive the fact he's not been the player we know he can be in recent games, because there is such an obvious reason for what might be a dip in performance.
But do you expect any changes then, given the fact that we had a 9-day break, other than maybe Kamara coming back in? Would you change Bamford, for example?
I forgot Pirro started, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would. I'd put Bamford to start. But then, as we've said in a few pods in the recent weeks, Bamford starting, but then please don't hesitate to bring on Joseph if we still need a goal, rather than waiting until the 80th, 85th minute sort of thing. That's just silly. Bring him on at 60, 65.
Bamford scored a hat-trick on this ground for Middlesbrough in this fixture. So, you know, one of those would be really nice, Patrick, if you could do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Please just run it back for us.
Against Borough. So please do that. Hopefully he's had a nice rest himself. It would really
help.
That'd
make me very happy.
We've got almost a fully fit squad, and we've had a nice rest, and there's just 3 games, hopefully, Paul, no more than that. hopefully just 3 games, so, you know, hope we can just really have a go at this with a lot of the players that we know we can trust, and certain players are just back to their best more than before because they've simply had more of a break. I think that is a big thing. I do think some of the guys needed it. They've had it, hopefully they haven't been, you know, exerted under as much sort of physical strain in training and lots of vigorous training. Hopefully Farke's actually worked more on sort of recovery and tactics side of things rather than actual getting the balls out and playing a lot of football on the pitch. I'm hoping it's a slightly changed team. I forgot about Bamford, actually, so thank you for reminding me of that. But Bamford coming back in, Kamara coming back in. So that would be Melier in goal, Gray at right back, Roden and Ampadu at centre back, Firpo at left back. He'll also be really key in transition, by the way. Gruev and Kamara in the middle, with Nonto on the right, Somerville on the left, Ruter in the number 10 spot, and then Bamford as a centre forward. But like you say, don't hesitate if you need to bring Joseph on earlier. Don't do it on 82 minutes. Do it on 62 if the game really doesn't look like it's going as it should. I think it's really important that we have some continuity, even though a lot of people are screaming for changes. I know that Ruta has come under some criticism recently, but you have to admit that a 9-day break, probably he's one of the players that's going to benefit most from it. So I wouldn't necessarily change much there. Last couple of questions here. What do you expect watching this game of football will look like?
I think it might fluctuate. I think there'll be bits where it's very transitiony, and then bits where there's maybe a 5 or 10 minute spell where there's someone settles in possession a bit, and both sides might sort of be happy with that. So transition at times, a bit of settled possession at times, but fairly even, I would imagine. And hopefully we come out just the right side of that.
Yeah, obviously, I think I'm kind of leaning on the next question a bit here, but I think goals in this game are going to be important. Whoever gets the first ones, we say this on every pod, and it is true in like football in general. Like, I think it more than most games, I think Carrick's the kind of manager that can really navigate a game when they've got a lead. I think they're probably one of the trickier teams to play against in that respect.
Yeah.
And I think that we'd be absolutely able to, we could put up quite a few goals, even though they're a good side, if we do score early and then can transition on them, because they're going to have to sort of try and break us down a lot more. And I think we can make ourselves compact to do that. And this kind of leans into something I wanted to discuss, which is about what Joe Donoghue and Martin have been talking about recently. I think some people will have seen it themselves, but if you haven't, then I'll talk about it a bit now. Basically, Joe did a bit of research into how we'd done when we've actually had less possession than the opposition. And he said that every time Leeds have lost this season, they've had more possession than their opponent. On the other hand, Leeds are unbeaten when they've had less of the ball than the opposition. So we played 5-1-4, drawn one. It's kind of good news, he said, for the remaining fixtures. And I agree, especially Middlesbrough. I think it's a good matchup in that sense. So I really wouldn't mind if the game looks like us kind of giving them the ball a little bit and then choosing our moments and when to aggressively press them, when to look for those high turnovers or when to transition. And if we can do that and we can have some joy from it and score. I know it feels a bit panic stations at the moment. We just need to have the ball. We need to score a goal. But like, that's not what's worked for us. I think it has been better, as we've consistently said, as you've consistently said in particular, that we're a better transition team, better on the counter. So I'm hoping that we might see Leeds actually have those opportunities. If we score early, we can do it even more. So what I'm expecting is more what I'm actually hoping when I say that. What could happen is we could easily end up just looking quite ponderous around the box, and they could be really compact and really hard to break down. And I don't want that to happen. But I'm going to kind of go on into the next question now, because I'm basically talking about it. Where will the game be won or lost? I do think like the first goal in this will be really key. I think if it's cagey, like you've mentioned, for a while and it's 0-0 and there's not much in it, it will look like what you said. It'll be kind of both teams having moments of transition, but both teams maybe trying to possess the ball where they can, and it's going to look a bit messy, quite mid-blocky in the middle, and lots of turnovers in that sort of area. But the game will be won or lost if Leeds score early or score first, really. I think that's going to be so crucial. I think Middlesbrough's powers of recovery are okay. I think ours are as well. But against each other in that respect, I think we'll both be pretty strong at keeping a team at arm's length. So that's what I'm particularly worried about. But if we can transition and make the most of those moments, that's where we'll win the game.
Yeah, I sort of wondered, we talked about us scoring first. If Borough do, will they? We said we expect them to start with a four, right? But clearly, they've had success playing the sort of three that becomes a five. I wonder, with Carrick and his tinkering, if they score at any stage of the game to take the lead, will they then change into that five and just realise that Leeds are bad against teams that sit in deep, and just do a bit of that, which I'd very much not like to happen. But I just wondered if it's something that Carrick might have thought about.
Absolutely, potentially. There is a blueprint for it now. I think it's been more so evident at Elland Road. I don't think they'll get away with that necessarily as much at the Riverside. This game means a lot to a lot of their fans, for example. So I think they'd be a little bit frustrated if they're sat back on a 1-0 lead.
Yeah.
But they could do it.
But, you know, would you rather win and play like that? Or, I don't know. I guess it depends what you would expect as a football fan.
So is that where you expect the game to be won or lost then? Is it all about the first goal for you and the transitions?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't on any of the podcasts, but I'd said this in the Discord about Blackburn, that I thought if we scored in the first half, it'd be easy. And then we just didn't for various reasons. And I'm not sure there's much different here. If we score first, I'd be very confident that we will win. And if Borough score first, then I will not panic.
No, I won't at all.
I don't see any value in that, but it might get to be another long day, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think if they score first, they're probably a better team than both Sunderland and Blackburn at probably keeping us out if they want to do that, want to be solid and compact and sit on that. So yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. But I think that brings us to the end of this podcast. We've been going for quite a while. So the end point I would like to make is that this is a tough game, guys. I'm not going to call for calm because I understand why people are panicking a little bit. I think if you had asked me a few weeks back, would I have taken a point in this game? I would have probably said yes, but now it's become a must win, so that's fantastic. And I hope the players aren't feeling that pressure too much, but I'm sure they are. And obviously, we'll know what Southampton and Leicester have done this weekend because they obviously play first. We play on Monday night. That's less than ideal, but yeah, hopefully we manage to get this done. I think if we win, the fan base in terms of their mindset will completely flip. Even though QPR and Southampton are difficult in their own way as well, I think a lot of people will grow in confidence from that because this is a tough game again. And don't expect it to be a walk in the park, even if we do score early. I did say we might have chances to transition on them a lot, but they're still a pretty solid team, so I'm not expecting us to blow them away, even if we do manage to win. Anyway, Will, just give the listeners a quick reminder for the website for our Patreon, please.
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Anyway, yes, we'll be back next week with a review of this game and a preview of the QPR one, which is on the Friday. Great, 4-day game split. Ideal, thanks EFL. But all that's left for me to say is thank you so much to Will.
Thank you, Adam. It's been good chatting.
And thank you, dear listeners. Enjoy your weekend and goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.